Yeah, our next presenter is Chris Gurman. Chris is Vice President of Thermal Recovery Systems. He's been an ASHRAE member since 2004. He's held various sales, engineering, and business development roles both here and abroad. His firm specializes in equipment that moves, measures, controls, and conditions air in critical spaces. Let's welcome Chris.
Good morning, everybody. Would everybody like to stand up? Because we've been sitting for about an hour. If everybody would stand up, that'd be great. I don't want anybody to fall asleep. Okay, so while I got you standing up, who is a consulting engineer in the room? Raise your hand. All right. And who actually works at an owner site? About a 50-50 split. You all can stand during the duration, or you can. So my name's Chris Gurman. I'm very happy to be here today. And what I hope that we find is what I want to present is something that both consulting engineers can use for your conversations with your owners. And if you're with an owner side, you have some rules of thumb or that you can apply for your own campus. So we're going to talk about the back of the napkin calculations for the low hanging fruit of energy savings in laboratories and recognize the EH&S drivers that enable that change. So a lot of the components we're going to talk about are things to look for in older facilities, which is a differentiation from the previous two conversations, Dave's was an older facility, but Todd's is certainly a new fancy facility. So I need to acknowledge David Faircloth, Chuck Hanning, and Dan Bastian. So I'm going to start with the review of a project that took place here in Georgia at Armstrong Atlantic State University, which is in Savannah. After that review, we're going to go over the qualification calculation. So I'm going to give you an overview of a project, and then the second half of the presentation is going to be some things that you can actually write down and take home. And if you write those things down and you take them home and you use them in your day-to-day life, I'm going to ask you to donate to ASHRAE Research. So we were asked to look at a building that was built in Savannah that had some existing challenges. It was a 200,000 square foot science building that had 36 laboratories that, unlike Dave's, which was built in the 70s, this one was completed in 2001. It had a high density of fume hoods per square foot. There were 72 fume hoods across 36 rooms. At the time the building was sold, it was sold with the latest and greatest in laboratory control technology, which were blade dampers, airflow measurement, high-speed actuators, and integrated controls. They truly bought, at the time, what they thought was the latest and greatest in technology. Well, what they found when they operated the building is that the building drifted to a constant volume state, and it reared its head in about 2005 when a professor refused to use a teaching laboratory because the students could not hear the professor speak. Specifically, there was one lab on the second floor, which is 2102, not 2012. You can get that switch, but it was lab 2102, was operating at 72 dBA. Whether the hoods were open or the hoods were shut, the control equipment had drifted to a constant volume state. The professor refused to use the space. When they evaluated the building, they found that the building represented 10% of the campus square footage. It had 25% of the installed campus tonnage. So of all the tonnage that was installed on the campus, 25% was dedicated for this building, but it used 40% of the campus utility bill. So in an effort to get the professor to where he would use the laboratory, the University System of Georgia Board of Regents funded a one-room project in 2006. Just one room, just to make one professor happy. Replaced all the laboratory control equipment with functioning VAV Venturi valves, which had a higher pressure drop than the blade dampers. They put sash sensors on the hoods. They removed the through-the-wall sensors on the hoods. And they also added fume hood occupancy sensors so they could take advantage of setting the fume hoods back. Based on the success of the pilot project, In 2011, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act actually funded a $1.4 million project to replace the remainder of the controls in the building. It also had some HVAC upgrades as well, added a runaround coil from the manifolded exhaust fan to the supply airstream. In 2012, the measurement and validation report showed a $237,000 annual savings, which was a 36% reduction in energy consumption for the building, which represented an 11% reduction in utility spend for the entire campus. So, that being said, that's a nice little project, the customer's happy, but most of this stuff is, you've heard at ASHRAE conventions before. So what I wanted to do was tie in, well, if I'm a consulting engineer and I've got owners, or if I'm at an owner site, what are the things that I can take away from this presentation to allow me to quickly evaluate, are there opportunities for savings on a customer's campus? Well, if we think about the insanity that is laboratory controls, we take air, we make it cold, we heat it back up, and then we send it back out. When we have customers that work in private industry, we explain the difference between heating and cooling your house, which is basically recirculating air around and around and around. And if you're going to leave the fume hood open, if you would when you go home, would you open up your window on one side of the house and open up a window on the other side of the house and just let that run all day, every day? Because that's what you're doing when you open a fume hood. We literally take 95 degree air, we make it 55 degrees, we heat it up to 72, and then we send it outside of the building, right? It's ludicrous. The cost to doing that ranges from $2 to $7 per CFM per year. I think if you looked at Dave's presentation, he was probably close to $10 a CFM per year. But you probably have a higher cost of, you have a higher cost of natural gas, and probably at the time the project was done, natural gas was, what, $1.50 a therm? So natural gas has come down to about 50 cents a therm. So the range of $2 to $7 per CFM is a pretty decent back of napkin calculation for the cost of conditioning outside air. So if you're looking for opportunities, if you have a building or a section of a building that's 100% outside air and you've got 10,000 CFM, if you use $5, it's going to cost you $50,000 to heat and cool that 10,000 CFM. So far, so good? I see some nodding heads, please. So far, so good? Good. So, with that metric, constant volume spaces are a low-hanging fruit for energy savings. You can reduce, because of reducing the air change rate, you can reduce the amount of conditioned air. Spaces without setback. You can add a setback. Well, the question becomes, well, if I add setback, how much money can I save? The other low-hanging fruit are spaces with more than one fume hood per 1,000 square feet. And in the case of room 2102, we had 12 hoods per, I think it was a 1,600 square foot room. So if you have more than one hood per 1,000 square feet, there's a VAV opportunity hidden within the building. So, if you all have your pen and paper handy, let's talk about how you can apply. So if you have an existing room and you have access to the original plans and specs, you should be able to determine how much exhaust CFM is in a room. I looked at a laboratory over at Agnes Scott about a month ago, and they had an existing laboratory space. And the question became, the engineer did not put the air change rate on the building plan, so we had to reverse engineer the air change rate. Well, it's pretty simple. You total up exhaust flow for a room, you multiply by 60, you then divide between length, width, and height of the room. That will give you the designed air change rate. If you have a building built in the 70s or 80s or 90, pull out the original mechanical schedule, look and see how much exhaust air you have in the room, multiply by 60, take out your tape measure, needs to be calibrated though, divide it by the room volume, and you get a designed air change rate. In this case, we had a designed air change rate of 12. Well, if you have a new environmental health and safety director, or you have changes that occur within a university or government system, you can then create a lower flow by using a lower air change rate. So if you change air change rate, there's an opportunity to save money on conditioned air. So I'll take this example one step further. We have a room with a constant volume hood scheduled at 785 CFM. The room has a programmed general exhaust of 500 CFM. Our room had a total exhaust flow of 1,285 CFM times 60 divided by the room volume. Guess what? We have 12 air changes per hour. Well, this building was designed in 1999. EH&S says we can operate at 8 air changes per hour. Well, there's an opportunity to reduce the exhaust air to 860 CFM. So far, so good? Do we need to stand up again? So a room with a 785 CFM, the room is reprogrammed for 75 CFM of general exhaust, reducing the general exhaust by 425 per CM. At $5 per CFM would yield a $2,125 per year saving. Can't get any easier than that. That's a constant volume reduction. The opportunities abound on college campuses throughout the United States. Dedicated fans, constant volume spaces. It's a very easy metric to find. The next opportunity for savings is a setback schedule. Let's say we have a space with we have several rooms with 10,000 CFM of constant volume exhaust. At $5 a year, or $5 per CFM for a year, it's $50,000 to operate that 10,000 CFM. Well, if we can reduce air change rate, exhaust air change rate, to 6,000, it would be a linear line to go from 6 times 5 times 1 would be, what, $6,000? No, let's see. 6,000 times $5 would be $30,000. That'd be a $20,000 a year savings if you just went from 10 air changes to 6 air changes. But a lot of times they won't let you do that. So the question becomes, how do I apply a reduced air change rate during unoccupied hours? So in this scenario, the value of the turndown is 10,000 CFM during our 40 hours a week. Yields instead of 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, which would cost us $50,000 a year, we're only going to operate it at 10,000 CFM for the 40 hours a week. And we're going to operate at a lower air change rate of six air changes for the remainder of the hours in the week, which would yield a savings of $15,000. Does that make sense? So if we take a very linear approach to the cost of CFM and CFM consumption, we can see that reducing constant volume flow saves money, and adding a setback saves money, but not at the same rate as reducing flow. But it's still a pretty good, it's a very easy calculation. So the question becomes, well, what about static pressure? Well, the cost of static pressure, we estimate between between 1 cent and 3 cents per CFM per year per tenth of an inch, and we base that on Georgia's cost of utilities, which is about 10 cents a kW. So adding 1 inch of static pressure to a 10,000 CFM system would cost you between $1,000 and $3,000 per year. So the value of turndown is significantly greater than the value of the cost of static pressure. So here we go. The back of the napkin calculation for setback. If you take your existing exhaust flow for your space, and you recalculate your allowable setback flow, subtract the two, multiply it by 0.75, and then times your dollars per CFM that you estimate for your campus, will give you a pretty good indicator of what the savings are to reducing airflow in a setback situation. So the first calculation that you need to walk away with is a cost per CFM. The second calculation is, how do I calculate the value of setback? And this is the calculation for value of setback based on a 40-hour week. What am I doing on time? Oh, I'm fantastic on time. So conditioning outside air is what costs the most amount of money in laboratory spaces. And labs are an easy target for savings. For more information about the original project I discussed, it can be found in the College Planning and Management Magazine 2001 entitled Quiet in the Lab. That's it. How'd I do? I was going to be disappointed if there weren't questions.
In your last slide, with the formula, what is the 0.75 significance?
It's the ratio of working hours to non-working hours per week.
Ah, thank you.
40 hours a week. There's 40 hours in a standard working week. There's 168 hours in the complete week. So that's the ratio.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Evans Lozados, a consulting engineer. Thank you.
So either I did a great job or I did a terrible job because you only asked one question.